This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors' links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Meng Xin, Vice President and Entrepreneur in Residence at Chinese venture firm Shunwei Capital. Shunwei is a $2 billion under management venture firm co-established by Chinese billionaire entrepreneur Lei Jun, who is, of course, also the founder of Chinese smartphone maker Xiaomi Inc. Meng joined Shunwei Capital in March 2016 and has so far screened over 200 Chinese artificial intelligence startups and led efforts to invest in 9 AI companies during the past year. Meng spoke to me on the sidelines of the Montgomery Summit on March 9th in Santa Monica, California. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Meng Xin. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Hi, Nina. Thank you for inviting me.
So, you work for Shunwei Capital. It's an interesting fund. For those who are not so familiar with Shunwei Capital, give us a brief introduction of the fund.
Sure. Shunwei was founded in 2011 by Lei Jun and Tuck Loy. Together, we manage about $2 billion U.S. dollars in assets.
That's across U.S. dollar and RMB.
Yeah, we have about 3 USD funds in total, about 1.8 billion U.S. dollars, and another 2 RMB funds for about 2 billion RMB. So adding together a total of about 2 billion U.S. dollars. And since 2011, we've invested in about 200 companies across a lot of different sectors, including IoT devices, including fintech, agriculture, new real estates, as well as cutting-edge technologies.
So what are some main areas and industries that you look at for deals specifically?
Yeah, mainly I focus on the technology-driven companies, more specifically artificial intelligence, augmented reality, 3D reconstruction, a lot of different areas within the new tech, so to speak. And in terms of stage, I look at more towards earlier stage, from pre-Series A to Series A, sometimes Series B is my sweet spot.
Okay, so before we go into those sectors, your personal experience is actually very interesting. You were previously an entrepreneur yourself, and you're an entrepreneur turned VC. Give us a little bit background on your personal career.
Sure. I started my career as an investment banker for JP Morgan in Hong Kong in 2007, and I was spending a few years covering the TMT sector, so technology, media, and telecom. And then when I went back, banking, I was doing my MBA. I tried to start a few companies because that was the sort of the interest I got taken away when I was doing banking for technology companies. So I started a few companies, but the one that really took off was called Orbius. We started in 2012 when I was doing my MBA at MIT. It was a company leveraging image recognition and to do a lot of cool things and exporting that technology to third-party companies who wants to do facial recognition, object recognition, and scene understanding. So we built an API and SDK, and we launched that as a product to help other companies to do a lot of for social purposes, for photo editing purposes, for social dating, and a bunch of other things.
The company was in China, right?
The company was founded in Boston and then moved to Mountain View.
Okay.
And it was stayed there for another 3 years, and it was sold to Amazon in 2015. And then I joined a company called Caesar Entertainment, which is the largest casino company in the world, and I run their Asia online gaming practice for about 2 years. And we're building out our basically the social casino platform in China, as well as launching our offline Texas Hold'em tournament called Warsters of Poker. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of compliance issues and a lot of difficulties in building, even though everything we do is 100% legal, but it's still difficult to manage a casino-related business out there. So then I left the company and found another company called Cog2, 知乎科技. We were leveraging image recognition to build a native advertising network, basically to understand what are the images on the social sites and the news sites, and take that image, understand it, and then insert a advertisement inside it, but without letting viewers to notice that that's actually an advertisement. So very interesting technology and an application, and then that company was later sold to a listed Chinese internet company as well.
My goodness, you do have... You're really fast, like doing so many things in such a short period of time, yeah?
Well, yeah, if I had it, I would love to have it the other way, where I can stay and build a company and for a longer term. But yeah, that was how it happened.
Okay, and then you joined Shunwei in...
So yeah, in 2016... So last year, I joined Shunwei, so I'm at Shunwei for about a year.
Mm-hmm. So okay, let's start with artificial intelligence. How many companies have you looked at in China and outside of China in this sector?
I think broadly defined artificial intelligence, I've roughly probably looked at, since I joined Shunwei, probably 200 plus companies so far, yeah.
And how many have you backed? Have you invested?
So in the past year, I've invested in about 9 companies so far.
So what are the biggest problems that you see for all those startups? Like, is it business model? Is it technology?
Yeah, I think that question gets thrown out a lot. And I think you look at it from a few layers. The first is we want to understand who are the companies who are the founders of those artificial intelligence companies. The good ones, or the venture capitalists are chasing, are companies founded by research scientists. They came from top research universities, or they come the research department from Google, Facebook, and so forth. And they have a lot of experience in doing academia research and publishing papers and so forth. The problem is, for them to become a well-known researcher, they have to have a portfolio of academia research papers that they publish and well-known. For that to be well-known, it means citation is, they have a lot of citations. And for them to have a lot of citations basically mean that they have to publish papers that are very fundamental, that are all-encompassing, and that is, useful to other people to build on top of it, right? Infrastructure layer work. And then when you look at startups, but then when they transfer into the startup world, it's difficult to carry the same mentality. If they want to do something that is very fundamental, that is universal, that is the underlying layer for all the other people to use, that's usually the work or the product of a super mega company like Baidu, like Google, and so forth. It's very difficult to build a startup around that, right? When you build a startup, you want to find a niche market, you find a niche product that you could build, and that you don't have to push the academia layer. You don't have to push the academia boundary, but you can leverage what is available today, what is possible today, and to build it. So
give us an example of a company that you invested that fit that description.
Sure. So for example, so I'll actually take my own company, for example. The first company I founded in Orbius, we try to do exactly that, right? We try to build a infrastructure layer where on top of it, we stack our facial recognition engine, our scene understanding engine on top of it, and we export. And we don't really care, or we don't care that much about what our customer use it for, but we just want to build the best engine and then beat all the competitors. But that's very difficult to maintain that advantage and to do without a very specific niche in terms of the market, right? We build it, basically our business model is exporting our technology, and we bet on our partners to have a very successful business so that we can be successful. The second company that I built, we abandoned that approach. We specifically targeted the advertisement, online advertising industry. And we don't measure our company by how accurate our image recognition recognizes things. We measure by how much conversion it actually helps into getting better advertisement or getting better cash flow for user. And then we use our artificial intelligence arm, our image recognition part, as a tool to enable we have a better conversion rate and so forth. So that's sort of the difference. And we're seeing a lot of companies, especially well-known professors, researchers, go into this field. When they do the startup, they still want to build a underlying infrastructure type of technology company, which could happen, could work maybe 4 or 5 years ago before, you know, the industry get so hyped about this. But today it will be very difficult because the Baidus, the Googles, the everybody else is launching, the Amazons are launching a great infrastructure here already, and it's very difficult to compete. So companies that we invest in, for example, we look at specific verticals in AI applied in autonomous driving. Right? We don't want to look at a company doing generic
face recognition
or even car recognition or car detection company. We want to have it apply specifically for a use. And autonomous driving obviously is a huge vertical in itself. But, you know, it's better than doing just a, you know, person detection algorithm, and you can in hope to sell it to a car manufacturer or a autonomous driving company, maybe to leverage the use. So things like that.
So you personally do not feel optimistic about companies like Face++ or SenseTime, who have that kind of model you just described, infrastructure level, and you feel like in the background of big technology companies providing, you know, the uncomparable infrastructure, they should be focused on more specific segments and subsectors.
Let me answer that. I think all the earlier startups that started, you know, prior to 2014, 13, in artificial intelligence, everybody nobody really have a specific vertical because we don't know what vertical works and what verticals makes money. So most of us started that way, as a platform, as a technology exporter. But companies like Face++, like SenseTime, I think they know this, and they're working around to find their niche as well. And some of them have found their niche in the finance, the fintech market, sometimes in the surveillance market, and some of them are better in one sector than the other. But you're seeing this trend that they're drawing towards this being more vertically integrated, being more of a service product firm rather than a technology firm. Yeah.
So we were chatting earlier about how sustainable this business model will be. What's your answer to that question?
The business model of
Face++ and SenseTime, technology exporter.
Yeah, I think if they were able to find a very good niche and then build around and be very vertically integrated and get deeper into that vertical, I think it will be sustainable. But if that does not happen in the next 3 years or four years, and if all the companies keep searching for their niche or just applying their generic platform to all the industries, then I think they'll have some problems.
So you gave an example of autonomous driving as a vertical. What are some other examples?
I think
healthcare?
Yeah, you see a lot of AI applied in healthcare, specifically in two areas. One, natural language processing and understanding the medical records and even conversations between doctors and patients, and so that, you know, they can do a lot of inferences among symptoms and illnesses and also treatment methods and so forth. Another is on image recognition, so applying computer vision on a bunch of, CTs, MRIs, DRs, and so forth, understanding specific illnesses in there. And you're seeing large companies doing that as well. Google DeepMind is doing that, retina detection for diabetes, I think, and a bunch of other use cases where there's long nozzles where you detect using image recognition and so forth.
Any Chinese companies in this?
A lot of Chinese companies.
Invested or?
We haven't put in money into a company yet, but we've looked at a lot of companies in this sector. I think the tech, so medical imaging is a well-established field with a long history, and the wave of AI and deep learning is not the beginning of medical. It helps. So there are a bunch of theory and technology within understanding how to do image medical imaging, and then deep learning I think helps some part of it to become more accurate and to become practical. Because in this industry, I think you look 10-15 years back, there's a lot of companies like GE, like Philips. They've launched a bunch of medical devices called CAD, computer-aided devices, that helps doctor basically to do a lot of things that we just said, detection and things. But it doesn't work very well. It's not very practical, useful, and people don't use it. Now I think there's a wave of applying deep learning into some of the image detection that helps improve the results significantly. The problem with that is most medical use cases, you don't have enough data to train it under the ideal case of using deep learning and so forth. When you say a medical case, you're usually talking about thousands of cases, not even tens of thousands. That is not nearly enough for a deep learning algorithm to be very useful. But it still works in some cases, and people are finding ways to make it more useful, and especially in China where data is easier to gather or cheaper to gather than in the United States. So you're seeing a lot of companies, interestingly enough, that are U.S. startups, but they do their research in China, or they work with a lot of Chinese companies or hospitals to gather data and then leverage that to train their algorithm and do the sort of research work in the U.S., and then they acquire and they get a file FDA in the U.S. rather than China. Very interesting dynamics there.
Like, okay, so now we have autonomous driving, healthcare, another vertical.
We're also looking at companies trying to apply AI in agriculture, into industrial production. For example, we recently invested in a company that helps a robotic arm to aim and grab. It basically enables a robotic arm to become intelligent, right? If you look at the companies that builds those type of arms, like ABB, KUKA, Universal Robots, and so forth, those are very traditional industrial companies that do manufacturing very, very well. They have a great technology in building the arm with super high precision power and torque and so forth, but they're not very good at building, making them very smart. Some of them have that capability, but it's not very easy to use. For example, when you have a robotic arm, you want to put into the production line. The first thing to do is for it to calibrate, right? To know where it is and where the relevant distance to other places. In most cases, you have to do that manually. You have to drag the arm to certain points in space and then tell this is where you stretch and so forth. The first thing the company that we invested is...
What's the name of the company?
We cannot disclose at this point yet. We haven't closed the investment. We're still in process. Mm-hmm. But the first thing it does is help it to do automatic calibration. Right, it does a bunch of calibration points.
With the camera embedded in the arm.
Yeah. So so basically, it just slides on top of the arm so that it knows where it's pointing, it's looking, and then does things along with that. It saves a lot of time if you can do automatic calibration. It also helps to understand, do a 3D reconstruction of all the environment that is surrounding, so that it knows not to hit, another. Another arm somewhere close to it. It knows where it is. It knows things like that. And it automatically swings its arm around and to build that 3D mapping. On top of that, it helps to do automates a lot of the industrial processes. Like if you shift a lot of products that are in bottles or in boxes that are not perfectly lined up, it can detect where the boxes are, the direction, the angles they're lined up, and grabs them in their the right direction, and then automatically lines them up in the way that you want it to. So that is very helpful in the industrial production line, and it's sort of that process that we describe is almost universal to a lot of different production industries. And they enable the robotic arm to become smarter and to see it. So that is, you know, industry use. We're also seeing companies in agriculture here and also in China leveraging image recognition technology or deep learning to analyze satellite images, weather images, and also drone images as well, to help farmers provide a lot of quantitative data for farmers. For example, in China, I think you'll be surprised to know that a lot of the farmers don't know how big their farm is, right? The scale of it. They know it's roughly, 3,000 mu, right? They don't know whether it's 3,050 mu or 3,075. They don't know that precise, and that affects how much seeds they're going to buy, how much water they want to come, things like that. And also, if they are insured, the insurance company also want to know like how much the field size is. And so the demands come from a lot of places. And that's very interesting. The first step is to use that image recognition to automatically reconstruct the field, and then you can do the spatial understanding of where the image relative to size in terms of spatial space. The second is that they want to count. So for high value added products like some medical plants or some trees that produce, I don't know specifically what they are, but they want to count specifically how many trees there are, right, one by one. If you have a large field, it's very difficult to do that manually, but if you have a drone and you have an algorithm that can count, then it's easy, or it's very efficient. You can do it.
And is it expensive? Like, does the cost structure justify the...
Yeah, I think it's very very cost efficient. I think that's the main reason why they even want to think about using this, right? It's you fly a drone at, I guess, 10 miles per hour, 20 miles per hour. You'll be able to cover a huge field, count all the trees, in probably 1/10 of the time of a human, or even less. And then with probably higher precision accuracy because you can verify it afterwards. So it's very useful in that way.
It just seems like the purposes are very... one-dimensional, just counting the number of trees.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing you find is that there's a lot of things that you can do. For example, when there's a fire, or when there's there's a disease within the plants, the illness, the insurance companies want to know how bad the field is affected, right? So they want to know... the areas like that, and then they want to do also prediction of how wide this will spread based on historical patterns. Sometimes, on top of that, the farmers want to harvest some plants, but they also want to know in terms of harvesting, the steps is, first of all, you have to harvest it, and then you have to lay on the ground and to have it dry for 3 days, right? For those 3 days, you have to have a weather that is clear weather. There's no rain. So you can tell that today is clear weather, and then you harvest it, but then when you dry it, tomorrow it rains, it's horrible. So you have to put a lot of variables together and then plan out. But interesting enough, those are all the capabilities that the companies have, but the most, usually the most popular demands today are the simplest ones, right? Yeah. Count how many trees are there in my farm. Count how big my farm is. Rather than doing that, I think they go step by step. They don't realize this technology exists in the first place.
Sure.
And then when they do, they will adopt it further.
So we're in Santa Monica in California, and I think one of the things when we come here, to contrast U.S. and China tech and VC space, is the scale and speed of Chinese technology companies. you know, do you have any personal experience to share in terms of, you know, just the scale and speed to adopt technology in China, and how that contrasts to here?
I'm trying to think of a good example.
Well, for example, we know that 150 million of the 450 million Alipay users use FaceScan.
Yeah.
To Sana on Alipay, so that's like half of the U.S. population.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of so in artificial intelligence, I think I would, so mobile internet side. If you treat mobile internet as a underlying technology, then yes, in China, it's super fast. A lot of people, you know, probably 50% or probably 80% of the population in China bypass the entire area where you start from PC internet and evolve in terms of different products in there, and then you go to mobile internet. They bypass the entire process, right? And you're seeing this in India as well. Like they just skip entire PC internet wave, and then they go directly into mobile internet, and then you see it from mobile payment, super high penetration mobile payment, and it's becoming, you know, people don't bring wallet, they skip the entire credit card area at all. It was never had an area where credit card was dominant. It went from cash directly to mobile payment. So in China, definitely that as well. I wouldn't say for artificial intelligence it's that quickly yet. I think that's people are still trying out in terms of the right direction, where to use it. And even for facial recognition and for Alipay, I think it's still in beta version, and it's not the very common thing. People know about it, people try about it, but it's not the sort of the normal user behavior yet. But we're seeing that sort of coming out a lot. give you an example. So Amazon Go was launched, I think a few months ago, right? And it's a, for people who don't know about it, it's a store where there's no cashier. There's not even an employee in the store. And there's a lot of cameras and weight sensors and death cameras and everywhere in store, so that they can track when you took something from the shelf, and they will automatically put that purchase onto your Amazon account when you leave the store. It's a very surreal experience. So when they announced that, just probably a month or 2 months after they announced that, there's probably probably four or five startups that I already know of are doing similar things and building, and they, some of them are, I already have a trial use, right? Amazon Go only have one store. A lot of them already have one store. A lot of the startups already have one store. And
so the speed of copy is really fast too.
Interesting enough, they're not even copying. I think a lot of the way that they did a lot of localization on top of it. The technology is not even the same. The way that Amazon did it is very difficult. It takes a long time to do a trial and run, and but when it works, it's beautiful. But the team has already 500 people, as I know it, at Amazon Go, and it's still in beta phase and still doesn't allow non-employees to try it. But in China, a lot of companies are already, you know, launched it, and you know, having normal people go in and purchase it, although not as super high tech as the Amazon Go way of approach, but it's very interesting. No, they serve the same purpose more or less.
But you wouldn't categorize, you wouldn't call that copying, like copy to China. You wouldn't call. I mean, it sounds the idea is from here, but localize it.
I think if they used the same setup, or if they use the same technology roadmap to do the same thing, then it's, I think it will be copying. I think this is more inspiration. They didn't see that a cashier-less thing would be popular or would be the direction. Although people, you know, thought about it, but they never paid too much attention or spent a lot of time into it. And then to see Amazon doing this with an all-out effort, they think, okay, maybe we can do it in our way as well. So they start launching it. But I think they do it very differently. And I don't even think they have the capability of copying it, even if they want to, today. So they do it differently. And then because they do it differently, I don't see that much of copy. I think it's more inspired in that way. Yeah.
So what are some major trends going forward that you see will become more apparent in AI in China?
I think you'll see a lot of companies going very deep into the verticals. There will be more verticals to be explored. I think the best verticals to be explored are where the so a lot of those AI companies are serving the B2B market, right? B2B market. You're looking at the markets where the purchasing decision from the customer are very market-driven rather than government-driven or other policy-driven and so forth. Those sectors are better, as well as sectors where, in terms of sales channel, there's not an existing incumbent that is super powerful, like in the surveillance era, surveillance sector.
So you see emergence of maybe leading players in...
Yeah, so for example, in industries, industrial production and in agriculture, there's no superpower yet. There's no superpower that dominates all the channels, and their purchasing decision is relatively market-driven, right? So I think you'll see a lot of companies coming out of that, given the market.
Will those companies be startups, or will they be, like, BAT?
Yeah, I think, first of all,
companies?
No, I don't think there will be BAT okay. companies. There will be startups. Yeah. If they compete, they will not compete with BAT. They'll compete with traditional sector companies who are try to become more intelligent and become more artificial enabled in their field. Like, for example, we're looking at companies that analyzed a lot of the IoT, industrial IoT data from a solar farm or from a windmill or things like that, or from an electricity factory, and they leverage all the data that they collected, and they use a lot of model running, and they predict when things are going to fail, things like that. A very interesting way of applying the technology, but I think they're in the long run they might face competition from the solar farm themselves. They might hire their own technology, but definitely not from BAT at this point. They might, if they grow large, BAT might get into their field. It might be acquired, but not in early stage. Yeah.
Other trends? Getting into deep in the verticals, but other trends? Like, what about the big technology companies? Like, what are their impact will be on the market?
I think you're already seeing this. So Alibaba and mostly Baidu are launching a bunch of infrastructure level technology for free or for some money, but much better or much at larger scale, at more at ease than the startup company. So it's very difficult for startups to compete in the infrastructure level today. It's either computational hardware, high performance computing, up to the algorithm layer, or even the service API layer. So if you're just building a facial recognition engine, I don't think you have a chance today, unless you found a very niche market that you can customize for and build it up very well. If you're serving an internet market, it's very difficult for a new startup to launch their product today. So that's, I think, the impact you're getting from the BAT entering this market today. You're seeing, well, from the U.S., I suspect a similar trend will happen in China, is that a lot of traditional companies are getting into this field. The Unilevers, the traditional sort of brand company, right. Consumer brand companies and the industrial company, they are desperate at getting smarter. And then they have a business. So AI is a thing that really doesn't do well being a standalone part, right? It really works well when you have a business and it helps that business to grow faster, more smarter in a way. So those companies have a business that can be easily upgraded with artificial intelligence in a way or the other, and they're looking directly into company. You don't see that very often. You don't see that often in the mobile internet area or even the internet area. But they're picking up the speed in terms of acquisition, in terms of partnerships, and
We're seeing that happening already. Media bought this German robotics company, Kuka.
Yeah.
And home appliances maker, Glee, is also trying to, add smart functions into their air conditioner.
Right. I mean, those companies I wouldn't even consider in this bucket because at least they're making technology products, right? They're not the...
Very traditional
companies. It's a leap forward for them, but it's not that big of a leap forward. But companies like Coca-Cola, companies like Unilever, they're entering sort of this market, and that's quite surprising to me.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So now when you look at AI startups, and how do you think about the valuation? Like, how insane is it? And is it going to go even more insane in the future?
Yeah, I think when you say insane, probably comparing the actual business value they're generating today, comparing and contrasting that with the valuation they generate today. So, yes, the business value in terms of revenue, net revenue and profit, is in most cases cannot sustain the valuation. So we're hoping to see a super growth in terms of those financial metrics in order to sustain those valuations. I'm neutral in terms of whether this will happen or not. I think for a lot of companies it will not happen. For some companies it will happen, and I'm very hopeful that it will happen and find sort of a niche in certain markets that they will be able to generate a lot of revenue and so forth. If my guess is wrong, if all the sectors that we're looking at, autonomous driving, surveillance, fintech, all the areas that are applying AI, those AI companies are not generating revenue for a long time, then I think you'll see a huge market correction very soon. But the chance of that happening on a total scale, I think it's not that big. I think some companies will become star companies. From what I know, a lot of the surveillance, AI companies applying image recognition and surveillance are already making sizable revenue. Probably not as sizable to sustain their valuation, but you know, sizable. I think meaningful revenue, and at a point where you know, in a few years, they can go IPO on their own. So
what kind of growth rate are you expecting from the example you just offered?
Oh, you're expecting tremendous growth rate. You're expecting, you know, the 5x, 10x a year in revenue and so forth, because they're starting from starting from nothing, right? 1 million, 2 million RMB a year, that's almost nothing with a super high valuation. You expect them to grow like that. But still, even if they grow like that, you know, it still takes a few years for them to catch up with their valuation, right? For them to justify their valuation. But if they catch the trend, then they might take off, and they might take off in a large, in a big way. And for the artificial intelligence company, there's a good thing working for them is that as they build their business, they gather a lot of data. That data can monetize on a second wave, and then most people don't really so. Data monetization, or at least think about big data for a long time, but to monetize that big data, for companies to actually really come out and really monetize that data, that's really only happening in the last year and a half or 2 years just yet. People still figuring out how to monetize those data. It's a fuzzy thing people throw around to say, you know, those data has value, but what exactly is the value? I think a year ago I would say that's just not very valuable. I think people artificially put a lot of value onto it. But today, you're seeing that value is starting to make money, directly, indirectly. So a lot of those artificial intelligence, if they stay in the field for long enough, they will become data companies in their own, and they have the best tools to monetize those data as well.
So 2016 was called the year when artificial intelligence really got into the minds of everyone. All the VCs and tech companies are in a major way. It was the keyword for 2016. So how do you feel this boom in AI, this focus on AI, how long will it last for this cycle? Like, how much time do you give it? Like, 3-5 years?
Media frenzy will always have its, you know, peaks and troughs, and I think it won't last very long for people to discussing it everywhere. But for companies to emerge and to do well, I think, you know, it really depends on. So it depends on a few things. One, it depends on how well the top companies are doing. If the top companies are failing in a significant way, then it hurts the industry overall. Second, it also depends on how well the how many new industries how AI is penetrating into new industries, right, into new verticals.
Mm-hmm.
If we're founding use cases in a lot of new industries, then this will go on for a while. But I think the media difference, even if it's doing very well, even if the top company is doing well, even if more industries are being receptive to AI, I think, you know, in a 2 years or so, nobody will really care about it or not discuss it as excited as they are today, because it's become a, you know, common technology or infrastructure technology. Everybody thinks of it as internet or mobile internet. It's not a new thing anymore. So either way, whether it fails or whether it doesn't, it goes really well, I don't think it will become sort of the hot buzzword in the long run.
Oh, so yeah. Artificial intelligence had two waves of great promise before, and it didn't really materialize. And this time, do you feel it's different? And what is the ultimate form will take shape?
I haven't been around in the world long enough to see the last two waves. So right. I think it's before my time. And then they failed for, you know, different reasons. But I think this time, you know, just think of it, looking at where it is. I think it's. I think a better comparison is not with the first two waves of things, but with, you know, things that happened recently in terms of technology frenzy, like VR, like other things that they go up and they go down. You know, I think that's a normal pattern, right? So especially from a media perspective, people like to talk about it, but they have super, super high expectations of it, and usually the expectation will not be met because the expectations are way too high, and they get dumped. This time, I think from business perspective, again, it's the expectation is already too high. But if you lower the expectation to its correct level, I think it's growing actually pretty well. There's a lot of industrial resources poured into it. There's a lot more talent in the market. The computing power is much more is to the scale where it can actually work, and people are smart about how to get data, and there's more data online to make it actually work. I think the problem is always the expectation getting too high, and then we're thinking about, you know, today we're already discussing about you know, when we're going to take over by artificial intelligence.
So that's the last question I'm going to ask you, which is picture your life in 2030.
Yeah. I think it'll be more convenient, but we're not going to be taken over by AI. It's we're still far from that happening.
So what's your lifestyle going to be like? Work life going to be?
I don't know. I hope it'll be very different from what it is today, but what it is exactly, I cannot tell. I hope it will surprise me. That's the beauty of it, right?
All right, great. Thank you so much, Mohsin, for your time.
Thank you.